Hi, Paul Sackett's Good News Planet. I'm here speaking to Stuart Shanker. Hi, Stuart. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you, Paul.
Stuart's a positive guy. He has two previous books called Calm. Boy, I love this. Alert. I love that. And Learning and Self-Reg. Is that right? That's like three books. No, is it Alert and Learning and
Three
Self-Reg?
books. Three books.
But now you've written a new book here, right? What's that called?
Reframed.
Reframed. Okay. And somehow the word COVID-19 occurs in this conversation, or even in what they had sent to me, COVID behaviors, including, all right, reframed, put that in the scenario of COVID to start, and then we'll go from there.
Well, we've got this data over the last year that's told us that anxiety disorders have tripled in kids and teens, depression's tripled in kids and teens. So we're doing something wrong. Obviously, COVID is an enormous stress, but what we look at is how we're dealing with that stress, how kids and teens are dealing with it. And basically, the short version is they're dealing with it in a way that it may look okay on the surface, but when you open up, look at what's going on inside the brain, we see that they are in what's called sympathetic hyperarousal, meaning they're burning way too much energy, they're not restoring, and that's why we're seeing all these problems today. And there's different ways that we can handle it. That's the point.
Well, what problems are we seeing?
Typically the way families are trying to deal with this is, say, through binge watching or screen time. The problem with that is that in order for us to sort of restore our energy reserves, to fill up the tank, and also do it some other stuff, cellular repair, boost the immune system, we have to go through periods of what's called restoration, where a certain part of the brain kicks in. And the problem is, if you've got a kid who's spending all their time, say, on their screen, is they don't click. We call it flipping the switch. They don't click that part of the brain they need to restore. So that's what we're seeing. We're seeing kids that aren't restoring their energy, and the result is anxiety, or the result is depression, or behavioral problems, or learning problems. So we've got to make parents aware of, there are signs, if you learn how to read them, of when your kid's burning way too much, and then we got to figure out how can we turn off those burners and get that kid back into a healthy base state.
Well, do we throw them into the backyard or around the play ground, and do we give them a basketball and say, shoot here, but don't play with anybody else?
You
What do
know,
we
the
do?
thing is, every single kid is different, and that's hugely important. So what works for one kid won't work for another. And let me add something to that. You can figure something out with your kid, and the little buggers change on you all the time. So what worked last week may not work this week. So here's my favorite example. We work all over Canada, and I was working with a group up in the very far north of Yukon, and they had 20 kids all in a class, really 12-year-olds all suffering. And I had this idea, they had a hockey rink there, and I said, geez, let's get these boys out every day and we'll play some hockey, burn some energy. But no, they didn't want to play hockey. And any idea I came up with, they just dismissed. And it has to be something the kids want to do, right? So I get an email from this teacher about 6 months later, and she said, thank you so much. You've transformed these children. I've never seen this kind of possibility. So I think, wow, geez, I guess they went and played hockey. So I go up, I go up to look at it, and the principal meets me and she says, you got to see this to believe it. And there's little glass in the door, and we look through the door, and there's these 20 12-year-olds sitting around a table knitting. Okay, that's what the key was for these kids. So
Yeah, because you're not a Canadian if you don't go play hockey. I mean, you gotta they deport you.
well, apparently, or if you don't knit.
Well, Rosie Grier was a famous football
Yeah, I
player,
remember Rosie Grier.
and Rosie was known to be a great knitter.
I did not know that. He was Rams, wasn't he?
I'm not 100% sure, but
During the Second World War, I then learned that that's what the Brits did when they had pilots shot down, the RAF pilots. They had them knit as a recovery program. So it's not without precedent. But what we find is, you know, there's any kind of way, you know, you ask this question, you know, what do we do with our kid? Do we throw him in the backyard? Well, that's a good idea anyways, just for mom and dad's sake.
Leave him out there. It's even better. Yeah.
But, you know, we've seen everything, cooking, music, but it has to be something. And for it to work, you've got to read the signs. What are the signs of when my kid is overstressed, physiologically overstressed? Do I detect it in his voice, in his eyes? And now I can start to experiment with the kid. And we're going to find out what gets you back to really filling up those energy tanks. And the reality is COVID is tough. There's no way around that. But we can do better than we're doing. And what we're seeing now is we're seeing kids now coming back to life despite everything, despite, you know, the lockdown. So we're pretty hopeful about this. I love what you said at the outside. We're pretty positive about everything.
All right. Well, positive is good news. So I believe. But on the other hand, you always have to pay a little bit of attention because good news to one might not be good news to another. And true?
Absolutely true.
Yeah. So, and since we're both in the good news, positive business, we also have to think about that other person at the same time. So let's see if we can get confused sometimes.
But it's an important point.
So tell me, what brings you to this kind of optimistic writing, and your background is what?
Well, I was sent to Oxford a long time ago now. I was in Oxford for 10 years. And I studied something called self-regulation. It was really a theory about how we deal with stress and what stress is, and it's pretty complicated. And when I came to Canada in 1986, they asked me to, you know, really explain what is stress. That's a difficult concept. And what can we do with kids to teach them how to manage stress in a way that's really good for them, that makes them grow, rather than in a way that we call maladaptive, that actually leads to problems down the road. And I was trained in neuroscience. And so we have gone through a revolution over the last 30 years where we can really peer pretty deep inside the brain now. And one of the big discoveries we've made is that, I'll just put it to you simply, there is no such thing as a bad kid, ever. Okay.
I'm okay. There's no such thing.
Yep. No such thing as a trajectory that we can't change. And now what we're starting to reframe is, for example, an IQ test. An IQ test is telling us something, but it wasn't telling us anything like what we thought. And what it's telling us is that there's something holding that kid back. And if we can figure out what that is that's holding the kid back and release it, that kid's going to blow you away. And that's what happens in our work across the country. I mean, just case after case after case where children were written off, we figure out what's holding them back, whether it's in schooling or in emotions or in social, release those breaks, and that kid just blows us away.
Let me ask you, because I've always kind of thought that this was possibly what holds either kids and our big kids
yes.
back. Yeah. Self-esteem.
So the thing is, you can't build, you're absolutely right, of course, but you can't bullshit a kid. You can't give them phony attempts to make them feel better about themselves when they know they really did badly. The greatest way to build a child's self-esteem is when they can see something that they wanted to conquer, something they wanted to master, but couldn't. And then it turns out, so one of the examples we give of this in the book you've got, Reframed, is math. Working with all these kids that we show, you know, we figure out what are the breaks, what's holding them back in math, release those breaks. the kid discovers that they can do it, and that's how self-esteem explodes on the kid. The kid now knows that it's within my capacity to do these things once I figure out what the stresses were that were holding me back. And we can always figure it out. It just takes, sometimes takes a little longer than others.
That's very good. So what you're saying is, I mean, in essence, talk is cheap. Hey, kid, yeah, exactly. You're good. Wow, you were able to add 3 and 3 and you got 6 and
Paul, you got it
all on your own. And
you got it.
Right. That's a,
you got it, Paul.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good thing. Well, yep. I had a buddy who told me that it's, you know, it's all about deeds. He used the word deed, the yeah. deed of doing, the yeah. deed of accomplishment. And I agree. Yep. And I apply to myself what you're saying, too. I can say I want to do X, Y, Z, but until I, you know, I'm in never ever land, actually. Right. I'm in the false scenario. I mean, it's good to have dreams.
Yes.
But if they're not actionable. Right. What do you
think? Yes. So that's what we do. And we go and we work with parents and we work with educators, teachers, and we teach them. Here's how to read the sign of when this kid's, we call them limbic breaks. A limbic break is basically something deep inside the brain. When the kid's got sticky or, you know, when the limbic breaks are holding him back. Now we want to figure out why. And the answer is always the same. The answer is the kid's under too much stress. Now, stress is a real complicated concept. It could be physical stress, emotional stress. It could be cognitive stress. We got to figure out what the stresses are. And by the same token, stress is really good for us. Kids need stress. So what we got to do is we've got to teach them how to handle stress in a way that leads to growth. And your example of 3 plus 3 is an example of growth. What we're seeing today across the board is a generation that are hooked on maladaptive ways of dealing with stress. So maybe the way they deal with stress is they run away from it, or they wait, or they'll eat something really sweet to give them that little bump, or all kinds of avoidance or denial or suppression. And so what we do is we figure out what are the stresses are that are real tough for you. And now we start to give them adaptive ways, growth ways of dealing with their stress. And they find they don't need to run away. They don't need to pretend it's not there. That's how they grow.
So, you know, I'll share one other thing with you, because I spent 2 years with Channel 13 PBS working, and we did the first Brain series. Okay.
Oh, really?
And I was, you know, I'm not a scientist, but I was a TV production guy. All right. I was with them. And so we created this series, which was the biggest series on Channel 13. The success would be the question of whether the station would go out of business or not, okay? Because Annenberg gave them $20 million and they weren't fooling around. This thing had to be good, okay?
Yeah.
And I was actually the last man standing, me and one other guy, all right? We made it through to 2 years. But one example that did come up, and actually I even appeared in Robin Spry, a Canadian, whose father helped start the CBC out of Montreal. He was one of our producers, okay? I did a whole scene in Mount Tremblant. In any case, on the famous scene about Phineas Gage.
Yeah.
You might know.
Yeah, I do. Well.
And Phineas Gage, for the audience, was a guy that got a spike, not the happiest story, but he got a spike in his brain from working on the train up there in, I believe, in Canada. And as a result, they found out that you didn't need your whole brain. Correct me if I'm wrong. You don't need your whole brain to be able to think. Now, there's an aside to that comment, because I think he couldn't think too well, and he was like in a circus act after that. But
he couldn't control his emotions.
Yeah. Okay. There it is. In any case, but back to our scenario. What the one of the commentaries?
You got it though.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
One of the commentaries that came out of that show was, who is more stressed and who's potentially going to get a heart attack? The guy that's in an elevator, the elevator guy that takes you up to the second floor, the third floor, the fourth floor, and he sits down for half of the day. Or the guy that's a busy, busy executive, you know, doing this, doing that, boom, 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 boom. Who's gonna do better in the world of potentially getting a heart attack?
Yeah.
It happened to be the guy who was busy, busy, busy. Did he adapt to the stress, or what happens?
Yes, he's adapted.
Okay.
Right? And we need stress. And we need stress, and children need stress. And we make the mistake of helicoptering, right? Trying to protect them from stress. And you know, you're not going to protect them from COVID. COVID's here. But what they do need to learn are, how do I handle stress? How do I know when I'm becoming overstressed? And how do I become calm? What does calm feel like? That's what these kids don't know.
Hey, Stuart, you're a smart man. You're a good man. I like you, Stuart. You're a good man. What's your website?
I like you, Paul.
What's your website?
www.self-reg.ca. Selfreg.ca.
Self, what was a dash? What do you mean dash?
Hyphen.
Hyphen?
Self-reg, reg.ca.
Self-reg, reg?
Yep.
Dot?
C-A.
Dot Canada, C-A.
Yep.
All right, good. And so, this is good stuff. You're good stuff. And so, let me ask one last question. And we'll talk again. I enjoyed this conversation, and you were quite helpful for many, and I hope many people buy the book. And more importantly than buy the book, what do we want? We want them to utilize the book.
Yeah.
That's your show. Your show is action.
You know, I gave a speech up in Northwest Territories in one of the coldest places in Canada. There was a theater, it was packed, I was in Yellowknife, it was minus 42. And at the end of the evening, I said to the group, you know, I'm curious, what the hell are y'all doing here? It's minus 42.
I'm frozen, what about you?
There's a little guy standing up, and it was SRO, he's standing up in the balcony, and he says, it's because you give us hope. Nice. And that's what our message is.
All right. Well, then I'm going to ask you, because we ask people this, and we ask people what is either peace, because we have a movie that we did, Woodstock Forever, Peace, Love, and Hope.
Yeah.
So, because I did the 20th anniversary of Woodstock.
Love it. Love it.
And so, I mean, we're really on the same page. So yeah. I'm going to ask you, Stuart, Shankar, a famous name here in the New York educational world. I guess it runs in the family. What is hope for you?
That there is no single kid whose life we can't turn around. And I'm going to go a step further, because you touched on it, that, you know, the U.S. may look pretty scary at the moment, pretty polarized. And I have tremendous hope for your country. You inspired Canadians from when I was a kid, and you will do so again.
Ah, men, ah, women. Thank you, my friend.
Okay. This is absolutely wonderful, Paul.
Take care.
You too.